City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 620. I'm Amy Matheny, and you know, this is a beautiful time. It feels like spring. Things are starting to bud out. We've had some good weather. Don't think that it's going to stay this way, folks. Yes, what happens is it dips back down always. I always say May is the coldest month of the year because we think it should be warm, and we've had a little bit of teasing happening in March and April, and not quite so much in March this year, but some here in April. We think it should be warmer than it really is. But what can I tell you? We still have many, many weeks until the big summer festivities all begin and everything really warms up here in Chicago. But we are kind of barreling down now into the big months, heading into just came out of Easter and Passover and now and spring break, and it feels like we're on a train heading straight to Memorial Day and Gay Pride and all of the fun celebrations that we have. And it's a really big month coming up in another couple of weeks. The Supreme Court will be hearing the debate again about marriage equality and same-sex marriage. That debate is heating up state to state. Legislation and protections and people prohibiting gays and lesbians from having equal rights. It's become quite at the forefront. I mean, you know, when corporations are starting to talk about it and states are starting to talk about the impact of having marriage equality or having anti-LGBT laws on their books, what that does for a state. So we've evidenced in Indiana and Alabama and others. It's really, I think the nation now is poised to be on opposite sides of a line. And I do not think you want to be on the wrong side of that line, folks. You really, really don't. One of the things that we have been talking about throughout the year has been marriage and marriage equality. And that being said, it seems like it's a fitting time to look back and see what was going on in marriages a year ago, especially in our own backyard. So very excited that next week we'll be talking with Cook County Clerk David Orr about the one-year anniversary that has just passed for Cook County for marriage equality, and the one coming up for the entire state of Illinois. But on today's show, you know, we've discussed that perhaps it's a less sexy topic. Like, marriage is kind of a cool, you know, big, loud, everyone has an opinion conversation. that has been at the front of political debates and elections and state politics and national politics and media coverage. And so it gets all this attention, right? And that story is still writing itself. We are not done with that story. However, there are other stories that are starting to emerge now as we are gaining ground and earning some victories in the marriage equality landscape. What are going to be the issues that are greatly going to impact our community? And one that continues to be an issue that needs a light shone on it, and I think that I really hope that in today's show to galvanize some interest and awareness around the issue of youth homelessness in our community. You know, we have discussed oftentimes on the show about bullying and legislation to protect kids in schools. But what about kids who are shut out from their homes and shut out from their families and shut out from their parents and find themselves on the streets? These LGBT people that are really just disregarded, who are thrown to the curb, so to speak, and that's not even a metaphor, thrown to the curb, left out, alone to fend for themselves. And there is a huge new effort going on in Chicago about providing resources and homes for those homeless youth. And Tracy Baim, our owner and publisher of Windy City Times, has been at the forefront of this initiative. It is a very important cause. And though maybe not gaining as much media attention today as we hope, I hope that this show and the efforts of Tracy and the apartment project and many other things that are happening in other states will bring to light a very critical moment in our history of what we are going to do with our youth who need us to mentor, who need us to protect, who need us to help them mature and help them have a ladder on which to progress. These are youth who don't even have a rung on the ladder to hopefully you know, climb up and make something of themselves and better their lives, build a foundation of support and security around them. So Tracy Baim on the show today, talk about the youth homeless issue and this apartment project and how you can be helpful to these efforts, and also what's going on in the LGBT news and the theater scene and much, much more. So stay with us. It's going to be an important, important show.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Thousands of Hoosiers gathered at Monument Circle in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana, on March 28th to protest the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, saying it would promote discrimination against individuals based on sexual orientation, and then marched to the Indiana State House while chanting, "No hate in our state." And whose state? Our state. Indiana Governor Mike Pence signed the bill into law March 26th, unleashing a global wave of criticism. He has now said he would support legislation to clarify the intent of the law.
Connecticut basketball staffers, including Coach Kevin Ollie, skipped the Final Four in Indianapolis, and USC Athletic Director Pat Hayden is giving the College Football Playoff Selection Committee meetings, also held in the Hoosier State Capitol, a pass. Both joined the Rising Tide, protesting Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, viewed by many as discriminatory against gay people. Southern California Athletics Director Pat Hayden, a member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, stated in a tweet that he will not attend a CFP meeting this week in Indianapolis because he is the proud father of a gay son.
Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson said he would sign into law a religious protection measure that opponents have said amounts to a license to discriminate against gays and lesbians in the state. HB 1228, the Republican governor, said he supports this latest version of the bill, prohibiting state and local government from infringing upon someone's religious beliefs without a compelling government interest. The Arkansas Senate passed the bill March 27th. Walmart CEO Doug McMillon is asking the governor to veto the bill.
San Francisco Mayor Edwin Lee, a Democrat, directed all city departments under his authority to bar publicly funded travel to Indiana in light of the Hoosier State's new religious freedom law. The mayor did not mention in his announcement the 19 other states that currently have similar religious freedom acts in the books. Similarly, many businesses condemned Indiana's move, including Yelp, whose CEO said his company will not expand its business operations in Indiana following the law's passage.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, friends and community members mourn the passing of a local transgender youth activist, Blake Brockington, who committed suicide. Brockington, 18, was a 2014 graduate of East Mecklenburg High School. Last year, he was nominated and later crowned Homecoming King as an openly transgender student. Brockington, who came out as transgender in his sophomore year, was active in the school band, serving as drum major for 2 years.
California's Attorney General is doing her best to ensure a proposed ballot measure that would legalize the murder of gay people never makes it off her desk. Kamala Harris declared she's seeking a court order that would allow her to stop the Sodomite Suppression Act, which advocates killing gays and lesbians by bullets to the head or any other convenient method. Harris is asking for declaratory relief from her duty to give an official title and summary to the measure before signature gathering stage.
Eagle Scout August Easton Calabriand has launched a change.org petition asking the Boy Scouts of America to end its policy that does not allow someone who is openly gay to participate in the organization once they turn 18. August's twin brother, Liam, is gay. The twins' father served as one of their assistant scoutmasters and was part of the Boy Scouts all his life.
Leon King is vying to be Philadelphia's first out African-American Court of Common Pleas judge. The former commissioner of the Philadelphia prison system and longtime civil rights attorney is making his fourth attempt for a seat on the bench. He currently resides in the Mount Airy neighborhood with his partner of 29 years and their two dogs.
An Ohio videographer rejected a lesbian couple seeking to have their wedding filmed. After reaching out to Next Door Stories in Bexley, Ohio, Jen Moffitt and Jira Kinsley were told, "Unfortunately, at this time I do not offer services for same-sex weddings, but thank you for your inquiry." The couple filed a complaint through the Bexley Area Chamber of Commerce. After a discussion with the organization, the chamber came to the conclusion that the discrimination policy needs to be rewritten.
In New York State, a large blaze broke out in the popular LGBT resort town of Cherry Grove, Fire Island. Many buildings in the commercial area around Holly Walk and Bayview Walk were affected, with at least two buildings, the Holly House apartment complex and the Grove Hotel, home to the Miss Fire Island pageant, have been completely destroyed. Three firefighters suffered minor injuries.
In world news, Pope Francis recently had lunch with prisoners at an Italian prison, some of whom were gay or transgender, according to an On Top magazine item. The pontiff visited the Giuseppe Salvia Detention Center in Poggiorale during a visit to Naples, Italy. Approximately 90 inmates attended the lunch, including 10 prisoners from a section of the facility that houses gay, transgender, and HIV-positive inmates.
Nicola Vendola, one of the first openly gay politicians in Italy, has announced his plan to marry his Canadian partner in Canada, as Italy has no current plan to legalize same-sex marriage. The 56-year-old LGBT activist, who is also the left-wing representative for the traditionally conservative southern region of Puglia, is reportedly thinking about starting a family and having children. Although the Italian prime minister has announced plans to allow same-sex civil partnerships, the influential Catholic Church vehemently opposes extending this to nuptials.
In entertainment news, Chicago alt-rock band Wilco is taking a stand against Indiana's new Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The band has canceled an Indianapolis concert in protest of the recently enacted Indiana law that critics say could allow businesses to discriminate against gay and lesbian patrons.
Warner Brothers is negotiating with its American Sniper star Bradley Cooper to make his feature directorial debut on the remake of A Star is Born. The hope is for Cooper to star in the film. Once the deal's done, their first stop will be to Beyoncé, who once was positioned to play the role of the young woman whose dreams of stardom are helped by a self-destructive icon whose best days are behind him.
Tim Gunn, the mentor of Project Runway, has said that he is not in favor of male-to-female transgender runway models during a speech at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Gunn said, "I have respect and admiration and a great love for transgender people, period. But here's the issue. You can have all the surgeries and all the hormones in the world, but the male skeleton is different than the female skeleton. Men don't have hips."
On the same day that Puerto Rico announced it would no longer defend its ban on same-sex marriage, Ricky Martin, one of the island's most famous people, released a music video featuring a married gay couple. Shot to the Heart, from Martin's recently released Spanish album To Those Who Want to Listen, is a ballad about finding love at an unlikely moment. And in its music video, Martin, dressed in black, stands before a mirror. Reflected back in the mirror are various couples, including two recently married men.
NBC announced that The Wiz will be its next live musical performance, with Cirque du Soleil boarding the project with plans to bring the show to Broadway in 2016. NBC's The Wiz, set for Thursday, December 3rd, will again be executive produced by Sound of Music and Peter Pan duo Craig Zaden and Neil Maron, with Tony-winning director Kenny Leon attached to direct both the live event as well as the Broadway revival in 2016-17. The Wiz is a retelling of The Wizard of Oz in an African-American multicultural context. It was adapted as a film in 1978 starring Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, Lena Horne, and Richard Pryor.
This summer, ABC Family will premiere Becoming Us, an unscripted show that chronicles the life of 17-year-old Ben Lewald of Evanston, Illinois, as his father Charlie transitions to becoming Carly. This docuseries from Ryan Seacrest will take Ben's perspective as he watches his dad divorce his mom, Susie, before undergoing gender reassignment surgery. The series will also focus on Ben's girlfriend, Danielle, whose dad is also transitioning into a woman.
Unfortunately for Michael Sam, he reportedly failed to impress coaching personnel at the NFL Combine as he attempts to get back into the league. Not only were his unofficial times of 5.02 and 5.03 seconds in a 40-yard dash slower than his efforts as an aspiring defensive end, but one personnel director in attendance said that Sam failed to excel in other drills as well. Last year, the St. Louis Rams released Sam, the first openly gay player to make a regular season roster. The Dallas Cowboys later cut him from its practice team.
X-Files is coming back to Fox as a 6-episode limited series. The series Emmy award-winning creator and executive producer Chris Carter is returning alongside stars David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, who reprise their roles as FBI agents Fox Mulder and Dana Scully, more than a decade after the show ended in 2002.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 6th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Experience The Diary of Anne Frank like never before. Join 13 actors in the intimate Writers Theater bookstore for a powerfully authentic portrait of a young girl clinging to hope. Rediscover the classic The Tribune called truthful, deeply engaged, and extraordinary in the telling. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org. The Diary of Anne Frank is now playing at the Intimate Books on Vernon and Glencoe, just minutes from Chicago on the Edens or Metra.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Don't wanna hear what they're saying. How you compose such a
LGBTQI youth, they have been at the forefront of the conversation these days, whether it be in numerous news stories of bullying, new laws against conversion therapy, or the tragic outcomes of youth and adolescent suicides. It's an issue that needs attention and needs our community to step up and give aid and comfort and resources to the future generations of our community. The 750 Club Apartment Adoption Project launched in Chicago recently to provide private apartments for youth moving out of transitional housing. The project was initiated at the LGBTQ Homeless Youth Summit that was hosted earlier in 2014 by Windy City Times. And I'm happy to have Tracy Baim, who I look to mentor me in anything. So good heavens, it's great if she is at the forefront blazing a trail for our youth. The owner, editor, publisher of Windy City Times is here to talk with me. Hey, Tracy, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hey, I'm thrilled that you're on. And you know what I love is that when I wanted to have this conversation, we talked about it a while ago, and then you and I were talking this past week, and you know, we were just talking about, we've been doing this a long time, you know, and what gets you excited and keeps it, keeps you passionate. And I think anybody in any kind of profession can understand that. And you said, really getting in close proximity with the youth of our community has just really emboldened you and you know, increased your passion and your vision and your very strong sense of purpose as to a place in which, you know, we need resources and help. And so talk to me a little bit. So I said, hey, come on the show, you know, impassion all of us and tell us about it. Tell me about the Youth Summit that happened in 2014. What was the Homeless Youth Summit? How did it come about and who attended?
Sure. And let me just say, in terms of that kind of inspiration, this year is the 30th anniversary of Windy City Times. So I've been thinking a lot back to what I was like at 21, 22 years old when I co-founded Windy City Times, and I started working gay media when I was 21. And I really had a lot of great mentors. I had mm-hmm. people who actually believed in me, because later in, when I was 23, I started, Outlines newspaper on my own with people who gave me money. I mean, I can't even believe they gave me money back then. When I was 23 or 24 years old, community people gave me equivalent of about $150,000 over a couple years to actually keep Outlines going, start it and keep it going, because it kept losing money. Mm-hmm. Something's never changed. But so I really felt like these adults that trusted me, that were maybe 10, 15, 20 years older than me, really saw something in me that I didn't yet see. And so when I've met a lot of these youth, just working in the community over the last 31 years, obviously many of them are in their 30s and 40s that used to write for us, and now even coming up close to 50, mm-hmm. I realized that, you know, our community has a lot of gaps in what it's doing for the youth. And so in late 2012, Windy City Times reporters, three of them, Kate Sosin, Erica Demarest, and Bill Healy, for 3 months did an intense investigation of homeless youth issues in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we did an 8-part series in the newspaper, and at the end, the last series piece had recommendations right from the youth. You know, we surveyed more than 100 youth. We asked them what they would need and what the gaps are for them. And while the series won a bunch of awards locally and nationally, it mm-hmm. pretty much fell on deaf ears to the service providers of Chicago. Like, we didn't see that it affected any change. Mm-hmm. So this was, you know, early 2013, and the marriage bill was starting to come up in Illinois. And one of the things that obviously happened was that it didn't get a vote. Right. So a lot of people were really frustrated by the lack of grassroots involvement in that effort. And I turned around and said, you know, why don't we do a march on Springfield to show truly statewide interest in this issue.
Right.
And the people that I recruited to co-chair it with me, I made a commitment to them. I said, look, I don't really care about marriage as a priority issue either. Like, many of the people I talked to, the grassroots activists, said, why are we focused on marriage only? Mm-hmm. And I said, this is the problem. Unless we get this issue out of the way, it will continue to suck up all the money and all the air in the room. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let's do this march, and I will immediately turn my focus to the next issue, which in my mind was dealing with homelessness among our LGBT youth, mm-hmm. as well as the general youth population. So immediately, the next week after the march on Springfield in October 2013, I started working on planning a summit for youth. And it happened in May with a bunch of other folks. Kim Hunt from Affinity was the director of the summit. We had youth that were co-chairs of the summit that worked on it with us. It was a three-day summit held in three different locations. The first day at Lurie Hospital, where more than 100 youth who are experiencing homelessness or had previously been homeless were giving us their input. And then the next day, adults and youth together at UIC worked on some solutions. And then the third day, we issued a report for the media. And then about 6 weeks later, we issued a 70-page report with all of the raw notes and summaries for the summit.
Wow.
And since that point is what we've been doing, and I can update you on that stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back, and then I want you to keep driving that forward as to what some of the information is that you gathered. I have a few questions before you get there. How did you find the youth, you know, that you, even just to start, when you started this whole story, you said, you know, we interviewed like 100 or whatever plus youth. I mean, I know, and we've had this on the podcast a couple of months ago with Kelly Simpkins was on, working on this project with the elderly and youth, you know, as kind of being two marginalized communities and how they have a lot of the same characteristics, but they are isolated and marginalized and off in the shadows and hard to, they're not at the forefront, you know, whether that means they're hard to access or we're not trying to access and we've marginalized them. That's, I guess, a debate. But how did you find your youth to like talk with just to even get started?
Well, so for the summit, for the reading, the series, basically our reporters stayed out overnight on the streets of Halsted and some other places. So it was a very one-on-one reporting technique.
Great.
But for the summit, what we did was one of the co-chairs of the summit, Bon Wade, is an incredible activist on behalf of youth for the last 20 years.
Mm.
So the credibility Bon brought to that brought youth to us. But then we also had three youth who we paid to work on the summit, who to then go out and outreach to their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we flyered and went to the more than 20 agencies in the region that serve this population. So really it was, we also paid the youth to attend. We paid them $50 and we fed them and gave them, you know, other things to take away. We really valued time. Anytime we had invited them to anything, including focus groups, we've paid them. We just did a 2 weeks ago, we did a training, an entrepreneurial training for youth who have experienced homelessness. 22 youth showed up in 8-degree weather, and Booth School of Business Professor Waverly Deutsch presented to them just as if they were her students.
Wow.
And Start Out, an LGBT entrepreneur group called Start Out, is the one who programmed it. We had lesbian artist Sam Kirk, who is from the Southwest side of Chicago, from poverty, talked about how she has managed over the last 10 years to take herself into a career path that has her at South by Southwest, you know. So it was very inspirational. And anytime we basically take that same model where we're going to pay the youth for their time, value their input, and then try to follow up on what their interests and needs are, what they say they want, mm-hmm. we want to try to fulfill.
Okay, well, let's launch into that. Then I'll backtrack again. But what do they want? What was revealed from this summit? What was revealed from these young people, the big needs? What are the resources? Where's the work to be done?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the report, like I said, is 70 pages, but it's divided into six areas of interest. And what we were interested in is certainly there are some big overarching needs. You know, it would be obvious to say they need a place to live, right? But there's many things short of that that will put them in a better place to be independent. There's big pockets of things that feed into people being homeless. So I'll go into a little bit of the numbers part of here. So there aren't perfect statistics on anything,
mm-hmm.
but especially in this area, it's very difficult to count. But Chicago Public Schools, their count shows that they have over 22,000 students that are experiencing unstable housing. So that could be a 6-year-old with their family. It could be a 17-year-old teen who's homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one number. Some statistics show that about anywhere from 20 to 40% of youth who are homeless across the country are LGBTQ. And then in the city of Chicago, the 18 to 25-year-old age group, which is a lot of what I've been dealing with because they're post-foster care system, they're experiencing different kinds of homeless-related issues. So what we know is the foster care system is one of the biggest feeders into homelessness in Chicago and in most cities. youth age out at 18 unless, for now anyway, they've been getting some support if they go to college between 18 and 21. Governor Rauner is, one of his cuts is to cut off all that aid that goes from 18 to 21-year-olds. So that's one area of a bucket of homelessness. If you are LGBTQ, you have an 80% chance of being homeless if you're in the foster care system because you run away from homes that are not accepting of you. And in addition, you have multiple placements, all the other trauma of being in foster care. If you're in foster care generally, not LGBTQ, you have a 40% chance of being homeless at some point in your young adult life. So it's an atrocious system. We're the parents of these youth, but we cut them off at 18. And I know for one, I moved back home at least twice after age 18, after college and then after a breakup at age 30. And these youth don't have that parent to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So that's one big feeder. Another is that our Chicago Public Schools high schools, as well as the college and university system, does not truly think that housing first is a priority, meaning for our youth to be able to finish school, they need housing. And our colleges and universities don't take that as part of their mission. So sometimes our youth will get a scholarship for their classes, but no housing comes with it. And you wouldn't expect a foreign exchange student to come here from Sweden and you'd give them, you know, a place to go to school, but not a place to live.
Right.
And so I think there needs to be a huge calling on that front. And the other is the religious issues. And so we're trying to push for the city of Chicago to call for a faith leader summit on homeless prevention so that we can keep families together longer so that these, you know, 13, 14-year-old youth that are running away because of religious beliefs being forced on them are at least given another couple years to get stronger by showing them youth that have been forced out and into sex work and other criminals that add, you know, basically puts them on a track to the prison system, which is, you know, obviously an insane thing. So there's all these feeders that we need to look at on the prevention side. And then so the youth ask for that kind of stuff, but they also ask for basic stuff. You know, one of the most emotional parts of the summit was the issue about storage. Where do I put my books if I'm going for an interview? Where do I put my clothes if I'm going to school? And even the city colleges do not provide a lot of sustenance or support for youth that may need laundry or showers or storage. So what we're doing is we've got a terrific support from the Polk Brothers Foundation and the Pierce Family Foundation. They've hired a consultant for 6 months to dig down deep into the issue of storage. And by spring, we're going to have a huge report about adding storage lockers to existing drop-in and shelter facilities in Chicago, and also possibly for freestanding storage options that we can subsidize either at public storage facilities or other places to help youth get on their feet and not have to throw out everything they get and while they're trying to build their life. So storage was, it seems like a Band-Aid, but it was a real emotional issue, including for their legal documents and their medicine and all this other stuff. So storage and laundry, those basic needs are things we're working on now. We're going to try to get laundry vouchers around the city that are geo-targeted to different drop-in centers so that any one laundromat is not taking the big hit if they offer to donate. We're trying to work on the Chicago Park District showers, making sure we know which ones are the safest for the youth and gender neutral. So there's all these kind of plans that are parallel working on, and some are a little further along than others, but it's really been exciting because these are the things the youth actually ask for. They're not saying, you know, just housing. They're saying a lot of other things that we can meet in the meantime. I have to say my biggest dream here is housing, right? I mean, that's the bottom line of the 750 Club. Our first apartment, private apartment that's been adopted should be announced in the next week or so. La Casa Norte is going to be getting it. We raised $18,000, so it'll cover a youth's rent for 2 years on an apartment. The youth have to be in school and are working, and they come through a case manager at an agency. So the people who donated are not renting the apartment. It's being funneled through AIDS Foundation of Chicago. So I'm really excited. Our first apartment is going to come next week, but I don't want it to be only about apartments. Long term, I want to build tiny homes in Chicago and have little tiny home communities that are about kind of the first step off the streets where you're going to school, you basically have a place to live while you're full-time in school, and then that home goes to the next person, and it's a very financially doable thing. We just have to, you know, create the will in Chicago to allow the zoning to to allow that to happen in the city of Chicago, like it's been happening in other cities across the country.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this a model that is happening anywhere? I mean, is there momentum in any other city or any other state for this kind of work? Because I would imagine that, yes, I mean, it's fantastic for the LGBTQI community to get involved with this, but that this is an issue of homeless youth, whether, you know, gay or straight, and perhaps there's some models that are finding effective ways in which to navigate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So first of all, just because we started with LGBTQ youth, for sure, you know, our laundry project and all our stuff is going to benefit all youth, which is, I think, really important, because during the marriage battle, a lot of the African-American and Latino politicians were like, why are you only coming to us when you need something from us? This should be a two-way street. And I 100% agree with that. And so I think this is a great way for our community to show that we care about all youth.
Yep.
And can we help lift all youth? So that's one thing. There are definitely some national initiatives. The True Colors Fund, based out of New York, is Cindy Lauper's baby, and they're doing really terrific stuff. In fact, they came and participated in our youth summit last year, and they sponsored it. There's also some individual cities across the country that are doing innovative projects of their own. And so True Colors Fund hosts an annual summit now where agencies and individuals can come together and talk about what works in their cities. And so we've been sharing information with them about the work we're doing, and we're learning about what other cities do. There's great work going on in Seattle and Houston, some cities in Ohio. So it's happening in pockets. I think, you know, it's definitely not any kind of comprehensive safety net at this point. And it's taking many different parallel tracks, including taking existing youth shelters and making them more LGBT friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been happening in other cities and in Chicago as well. So yeah, there's definitely some work, some amazing work happening. What I'm trying to do in Chicago is to try to make it more comprehensive and filling the gaps, in addition to making it quicker, right? I mean, some agencies are so large that they can't innovate, and if it's not funded by a grant, they can't do it.
Yep.
So we need independent people like myself and small business owners and corporations and government people to do the more innovative stuff, and then maybe it'll eventually get funded so that it can be adopted by a nonprofit. But that's what I see as the biggest gap here, is engagement with the political and corporate world on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're going to be doing this fall is kind of like AIDS Walk works for AIDS agencies. We're going to be doing a sleep out, which happens in other cities. We're going to be doing a sleep out in Chicago that any youth homeless serving agency is going to be able to piggyback and do pledges and such and make money back for their agency. This way it can kind of lift all boats, and it'll be somewhere in Lakeview, and we'll be announcing it probably by mid to late April as a way for some of the agencies to make up for the money they're going to be losing from government cuts this year.
Wow. So you've mentioned these areas of prevention, of storage, of housing. Are there other, did you mention that there were more than three big, or am I wrapping them up into three big areas? I just didn't want to leave anything out before I moved on.
Oh, there's probably a couple dozen that are getting little, like we did a big job fair last fall for youth, and
so
about 100 of those.
Employment,
well.
You know, the ability employment, to get employment.
So what we did was we surveyed agencies across about 50 data points. We're going to be releasing that report by May. It'll be an infographic form where it's about food, it's about employment training, it's about laundry, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask them every toothbrush they need, every diaper they need, everything they need, and we'll be releasing that across all those categories soon, so that, you know, it'll be easier to go to corporations and donors to say, you know, can you underrate the whole cost of this particular area?
Yeah.
So that's our goal this spring.
You know, going back to something you said earlier about, you know, why you were motivated to have the march on Springfield, because, you know, this is my language. Let's get that piece done, because there's so many other things we should be doing. And we're spending so many dollars and so many resources. And we have entire organizations whose missions for, you know, decade plus have been essentially getting marriage equality. Are we seeing any interest and motivation by many of these organizations when it's looking like marriage is imminent here, hopefully this summer, with the Supreme Court hearing in April, and then hopefully the what would you call it, the not the findings, but the ruling, hopefully in June. Some of these organizations are going to become obsolete if they don't find another avenue of service and mission behind their organizations. Are you seeing some interest and seeing some traction from organizations to really get involved with this issue of LGBT youth and LGBT homeless?
I think it's mainly the organizations that serve youth already that have been interested in this, not the general political organizations. And I agree with you that just as our newspaper, Windy City Times, has to evolve and adapt, our nonprofits do as well. And some of them may be more obsolete in a couple of years. There certainly are still issues of policy and politics.
Sure.
Organizations like the Illinois Safe Schools Alliance, they're working on the conversion therapy bill with other, in alliance with other groups. So there definitely are some still things we have to be aware of and be a watchdog to make sure things don't slip backwards on rights. But I agree that I wish there was a larger interest in this issue, but I think that's our goal with the fall event, is to really bring a really high level of visibility to the issue, mm-hmm. and tie it both the LGBT community as well as the general community. It can be a very complex issue. It's not just about someone being kicked out because they're trans or gay. Sometimes it's complicated by poverty and abuse and drugs. And so you really have to look at a more holistic solution. So you have to work in coalition. And Absolutely. Not all of our agencies are used to working in coalition very well, mm-hmm. certainly not with non-LGBT groups. So I really feel like this is an issue that brings out the best in organizations and people, and those who don't like to work with others or are worried about their own turf, they'll be left behind. That's what's going to happen.
Well, it is interesting, right? Because you and I have been doing this and talking with people and covering the stories of the community for a long time, you longer than I. And it is interesting how we are seeing how it's all these little pieces where people are like, oh, well, marriage is just suddenly happening. And we're like, no, it's not suddenly happening. it's a lot of things. And people going, wow, well, you know, the trans movement is really happening now. And it's like, no, it's had small victories. And it's also it's a community that's had to be patient, right? And be in the sidelines and be marginalized from the L and the G and, you know, sometimes the B in policy and protections and all of that. So I do think that, you know, it is prime right now for this to be something that somebody standing on the mountaintop banging the drum loudly. And you're a good loud drummer, Tracy Baim.
Well, one of my concerns is that a lot of places, including Canada, once they got marriage, their movement really died in many, many respects. If we don't keep the momentum up, we will not be ready for the next attack. We'll have to reconvene, and we'll have lost a lot of our momentum. Yeah. So we need to keep pushing on senior issues and on youth issues and on trans issues and any other issues that come up, immigration, for example, as coalition politics, because the right is not going to give up.
Right.
Just like the racists never gave up after 1960, they're still around. And so we have to continue to stay organized and stay connected so that we're ready for the next really battle. And in the meantime, do these consistent service level things that need to happen to lift all boats. So, you know, a report just came out today that we have on the Windy City Times website about the extra level of poverty that LGBT women experience relative to men. And it's a really important thing to remember that we are not all wealthy white people, right? We have incredible diversity within our community, and the people that got married and now have tax benefits associated with that, some people have paying penalties, but many people are getting tax breaks. I think there should be a tithing, you know, a community tithing, that for the next few years, all the benefits you have reaped from getting your marriage should be going into helping youth and seniors and trans individuals make sure that they get to have that full experience of equality, because marriage was never their holy grail. They have to just worry about subsistence living. So we should really, as a community, make sure that we don't lose that momentum.
So the 750 Club, this is one of the big things that came out of this youth summit. Tell me just the mission of the 750 Club Apartment Adoption Project, and what is it, and how does it work?
Sure. So right now in Chicago, there are fewer than about 250 bags of any kind dedicated to youth. But that includes overnight shelters, transitional living, and scattered site housing. The other fourth thing that happens for youth is like drop-in centers that are not sleepover. And so our concern was trying to free up some of the spaces in the transitional housing, which is usually a two-year, 24/7 ability to stay 24/7 facility. Mm-hmm. Some of the overnight shelter beds, which are the worst situation to be in, can those people can go to transitional housing. So it basically takes an average of about $750 a month to house one youth a month. So our goal was to create teams that would raise $750 a month for 2 years. So that could be 30 of your friends doing $25 or 10 of your friends doing $75. For 2 years, you would house one youth. And the case managers at the agencies would manage the apartments, manage the youth, and also create an opportunity, if the youth wanted it, to have a mentorship relationship with the team. Again, managed by the case manager so that there's no issues in terms of crossover, crossing boundaries, that kind of thing. So we just launched in December with it, and the goal is to try to do 4 or 5 units this year, and the fall fundraiser will really lead into that a lot. We have a few team captains. We have PFLAG raising money, and the Oak Park LGBT group is raising money, and different individuals are contributing. So it's really partly an awareness raiser, like, look, this is all it takes. And if we as a community came together, we could get many apartments. We also have landlords that are agreeing to do some discounts if we can raise the money for their units. And again, long term, that same $18,000 that would house a youth for 2 years in an apartment would actually be enough to build a tiny home. Mm-hmm. So if we long term have that plan, we can actually do permanent housing for $750 a month for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to break the numbers down to a manageable level and convert that long-term to being a tiny home movement in Chicago. But for now, we want to house as many youth as we can. It's the number one way that we think that they have a chance at not being homeless as adults. You know, your chance of being homeless as an adult is, enormously more likely if you experience any amount of homelessness as a youth. So we're really trying to prevent it on the front end. A lot of the resources that go into homelessness nationally are to chronic homeless people that have been for, years and years and have health problems, our veterans, et cetera, and that's great. But what happens is that means the youth homeless resources get almost none because then they're not seen as chronic yet. Mm-hmm. They're not seen as going to the emergency room 30 times. So we kind of need to have two different perspectives on homelessness. You deal with the adult issues separately, and then maybe you can prevent some of the adult homelessness by putting some resources into the youth side of the equation. That's what a lot of these amazing agencies in Chicago and the state are doing. Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, for example, I'm attending a lot of their meetings, and they're just doing amazing work trying to, first of all, stop the budget cuts, and then also being a really good coalition partner to these agencies and helping them when they have policy issues or other kinds of concerns that they need met. So really what we're doing is kind of supplement and complement and all that other kind of stuff was already happening, which is a lot. And the 750 Club is just one little drop in the bucket where if we get an apartment, that'll free up a transitional space. And that means someone from a shelter can get a permanent bed.
Yeah. So the 75 number, 750 number is really important based on the levels of giving, because then you can kind of see your dollars in action. Can you tell us about these levels of giving and what a donation, like if you give $75, what does that do and on up, $750 per month?
Right. If you give $75 a month, you're partnered with 9 other people who give the same amount, and there's one apartment rented for 2 years. And what happens is that money is going through the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, so it's tax deductible. AIDS Foundation of Chicago then works with the youth agencies to get the apartment, and then the youth has a case manager so that they have some adult that's kind of supervising them and also helping them get transit cards to go to doctor's appointments. If they need furnishings or things like that, they have a person that's their liaison that's a professional. And then that case manager can also assist in connecting to potential mentors from the teams that are adopting the apartment. Mm-hmm. Other people, you can also just give a flat amount. Like some people just gave a flat $500 and they're not doing a monthly pledge. So if you look at it on the link that you'll provide on the website, there's many options. You can just give $10. Like you said, someone today gives $10, someone give $25, just a flat one-time amount, and all of it's going to be aggregated together to be able to get these apartments.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really cool when you think about the fact that if you gave you and a friend or you and your partner or you and whatever, you know, whomever, you gave $75 a month for 10 months, you would house a youth, you know, for you would house a youth for the month.
Right.
Which is an amazing, amazing, amazing thing. And so, I mean, it's a great way to be, you know, engaged. And I know there's so often there are these, so often we feel like, oh, I know there's a problem, but I don't know how I can help. And some people feel like, well, I can't give a lot of money, but, is the website such that, you know, that you can say, this is my team, like people are doing the AIDS walk or doing something like that, that you're like, this is my team and I've pledged to raise this amount of money. And go on there and sign up and give.
Right. So, for example, so there's a place everywhere that has on the 750 Club on that donor page. It says team captain. So if I, Tracy Damon, doing a team captain, all of the people just put my name when they sign up. So anybody can do that without pre-registering. For the event this fall, we'll also have teams for the pledge drive that'll be separate through a separate campaign. But for the 750 Club, for sure, you can just start it, and then we'll know, and we'll have your email contact if you need anything special. People can email me, editor@WindyCityMediaGroup.com, if they want to get any more information about it. But it's a real simple process right now, and like I said, it's really early stage, so it's kind of fun to be on the ground floor of this private adoption of apartments. A lot of people can't adopt a youth. They're not in a position to. But here you're almost adopting a youth for 2 years, right? Yep. Without the legal obligations or without being a landlord, you get to adopt a youth. For me, I'm a team captain, and it feels terrific. You know, it feels like you are actually helping someone to get off the street, even if it's for only a 2 year period of time.
Yeah. Well, and just in case you're listening to this and you're not able to go to our site while you're listening, it's just a real easy tinyurl.com/apartmentadopt. That's tinyurl.com/apartmentadopt. We'll take you to the AFC website that has, you know, opportunities there for online donations or monthly pledges or all of that. And then Tracy, you're also talking about people can get in touch with you. We'll keep your email in here, editor@WindyCityMediaGroup, because there's also the opportunity that if you have an apartment that's no cost or low cost and you want to provide, or if you think, you know, if I have space empty, I'd like to be a part of this program. You're looking for people who have apartments as well.
Right, exactly. And again, they're case managed. So you're going to be dealing with someone who's going to be the legal landlord, I mean the legal leaseholder, and they will mediate any problems and they will take the youth and put a different youth in if there's any issues. So it's worked well across the city of Chicago for many different kinds of apartments, many different housing solutions this way. So people that are worried about, you know, it's just like any other tenant you would have, but in fact better because they have somebody who's legally responsible for the apartment, an agency that will mediate any problems.
Mm-hmm. And I do know that, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, when doing the march or other instances when the Black community or the Latin community would be like, well, you know, you want our help, but are you going to then scratch our back? You know, these issues should all be universal. It is very cool that the AIDS Foundation as well with Vida Cita is starting a project with the Puerto Rican Cultural Center. And they're teaming on as well to help HIV positive homeless youth get a new lease on life. And they've been working together on a new initiative. So there's information coming out about that as well. Tracy nor I are running that, but I can give you some a website. You want to contact Jorge Sestu, I hope I'm saying his name right, and I'll have his email as well. You know, if you are interested in what's going on with HIV positive youth and the new
Africa. And let me say something a little bit about that because that organization also runs the only LGBTQ specific homeless youth beds right now It's called El Rescate. There's another organization called Project Fierce, which hopefully is going to be opening their facility by the end of this year, and it's also going to be LGBTQ youth specific. Most of the agencies in town are just general youth, mm-hmm. and certainly know that they have a large percentage that are LGBTQ, like at the crib. But El Rescate is specifically for LGBTQ youth, and this new program they're doing with AIDS Foundation of Chicago is HIV, is HIV related. But they've already got experience with youth, so that it was a really great idea and a great partnership.
Yeah, I mean, they say that it's El Rescate, here's the information, El Rescate 2.0, which is an extension of their El Rescate program, which you're talking about, which are scattered sites, permanent supportive housing program for HIV positive and LGBTQ youth age 18 to 24. So, they've just started this as well, January 1. With 15 units available to HIV-positive homeless youth, and they hope to grow to 30 units by next year. So they're trying to double in size. I'm sure it's been very inspiring, to work with these young people, to meet these young people. And I appreciate, Tracy, that if anybody can rally and create a loud noise that others will hear. But I hope those of you who listen to our show, will find maybe you're involved with a nonprofit within our community or an organization within our community. It really doesn't matter what it is. It could be arts. It could be, business. It could be political. It could be obviously direct services. But I think we need to ask those organizations, what are your efforts for this part of our community, especially for the youth and then for the marginalized, homeless, displaced, struggling youth, because those statistics are extreme. They're extremely high. And that Tracy said yesterday about the youth coming out of the youth coming out of the homeless system, in foster care, the youth coming out of foster care, I'm going to say this correctly, youth coming out of foster care, age 18 to 21, 80% will find themselves homeless at some time if they are LGBT, and if not, 40%. Those are staggering numbers, and I really just hope people will rally behind this as what is next for our community, one of the big torches that we need to pick up and keep burning bright. All of these websites, how you can donate, how you can become a team leader, will be on our show notes, as well as Tracy's email in case you have a landlord or someone, you are a landlord or have someone interested in donating the use of an apartment at no or low cost. Also, we will link Jorge's email and the phone number for the program as well that they are launching. So much good stuff. And I hope, Tracy, that we can talk again. This is a story of youth that I'm trying to actually keep alive here the next couple of months, because the marriage story is writing itself out, right? And
right.
As we head into Pride season, really important. I know as a former member of About Face Theater, they were talking in one of their youth shows about homelessness and the youth community, over, 7 or 8 years ago. And I'm just glad that it's finally getting some attention, and hopefully we can make some change and provide some resources.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everyone, I hope that this has been inspiring to you. And as we move on next week to talk about an issue that I know has been of great importance to so many of us, the marriage equality conversation with Cook County Clerk David Orr next week, looking back on the year anniversary of marriage equality coming to Chicago and Cook County, and coming up on the 1 year anniversary of marriage in the state of Illinois. I'm excited about this conversation and to see what are the stats, what are the logistics around it, and what are we learning in the process of this newfound history of having some data and information on same-sex marriages. So all that and more, but I hope you're enjoying the springtime, and happy April to all of you. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
B-C-D-E-F.
thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Well, now you know your ABCs. G-O-O-D-B-Y-E-R.